Good. Thank you very much. So today on the call we have Alejandra, Ben, Christelle, David, Dejan, Eduardo, Katrina, Martin, Miliana, Stephen, and from Secretariat, Bart, Yorke, and Kim. So we have again another packed agenda for today. The first one was about the council practice guideline. I sent it the latest version with addition and still one open question to the list, I think more than a week ago. So if you see, I've added the part about the that we publish draft agenda and all related documents on the CCNSO Council Wiki and inform CCNSO members accordingly so that they can see and see what the Council is discussing. So this is in line with our consultation with the community during our Hyderabad meeting. And another one is a still open question. Where is it? Okay, section 8, which says that in the event that amendments to the minutes are proposed, the chair will ensure that the proposed amendments are included and or determine whether the minutes will be amended, and amended minutes will be resent again. Are they resent again? Or we just consider them, but just my feeling was that for minor corrections we just correct them and do not resend, but I may be mistaken, so I'd like to get some comments from Kim. Kim, you usually send the minutes. If that's okay that we resend them again. Oh, well, in any case, if we leave it here, we can resend them, but but normally if somebody said, oh no, it's just not what I said, and please correct, we correct, and... Yes, Bart?
I think the way to read this, and maybe that is just a matter of providing a bit more clarity, is effectively it is the and or is two options. Either the chair will ensure that proposed amendments are included, and or determine whether the minutes will be amended up till the full stop and for approval. So either you ensure as a chair that they will be included, or if in case of substantial changes or whenever you deem necessary, they will be amended and the amended minutes will be sent for approval again. That's the two alternatives. So, and up till now, you're right, we never used the second method, and maybe in the early days, but no, most of the times, and that's because the minutes are so well taken, we just, there are just a few minor changes to them. So you're in option one.
Okay, so I see also discussion and the chat window, so... Exactly, that was my impression, that minor corrections we do not resend, and it's just a waste of time anyway.
Yeah.
So could we a little bit clarify this part? And
maybe just make it, say, the chair will ensure either that the proposed minute amendments are included or if determined... appropriate, the minutes will be amended and these will be resent again for approval.
Okay, it sounds okay to me. So we amend it, and so somebody else will have a last look at and translate it into plain English. I think it's better if we do that. Who would volunteer for that?
Katrina, may I make may I make a suggestion that we send the alternative text just by email to the whole list so people can have a look at it? that's yeah, just as that quick
for this particular paragraph, and then Ben agreed to check the language.
Yeah.
So thank you. I hope we will be able to sign this off. Oh, at least we. Oh, yeah. Actually, according to our new procedure, we will publish it for public comments and send information to the CISNESO on members list. Okay. So Bart, you will rephrase it and send it to the list. And
yes, I'll do it right after the call.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, next one. It's a travel funding and CISNESO liaisons and observers. Do we have the latest version with all the... Okay, we do not have all the comments. What I discovered was that according to the bylaws, so we have observers, which we exchange with other supporting organizations. It's if both councils approve, so and then we inform ICANN secretary with the CC to the relevant council chair. And second thing is liaisons. We have theoretically, we have liaisons with GAC, ALAC, and regional organizations. But again, according to the bylaws, it doesn't work the other way around. So we can have their liaisons on our council, but it doesn't say that we can have ours on theirs. It's about GAC and ALAC. Nevertheless, we have with ALAC. Bart, is that your new hand? You want to comment something?
That's an old hand.
Okay, old hand. Another thing I discovered in the bylaws, so even though we exchange, according to part about the CCNSO, we exchange observers with other SOs. Other SOs, at least the GNSO, exchange liaisons with us. I have no clue. I'm not a native English speaker, so I have no idea if there's any substantial difference between observer and liaison. Actually, I learned the word liaison only when I joined the ICANN community. So I have never... I don't know, maybe they are the same. I see Stephen's question, observers are not the same as liaisons. I don't know, maybe they are, but why do they? We have two terms in... Okay, maybe it's not very important, and we can still call them whatever we want. It doesn't change the idea. But Alejandra also learned that the word liaison when she joined the ICANN world. Yes, well, at least for me, that's definitely the case. Yes, well... Maybe somebody can say something. If it's not important, it's not important. But in our part, in the bylaws, there are two separate articles. One speaks about observers, another speaks about liaisons.
Yeah, Katrina.
Yes.
I
see. I have a hand. Yeah. Okay. But Bart, please go on.
Or if somebody else has a hand, Martin, please go ahead. I'll wait.
Well, thanks, Bart. Yeah, I must admit, this sort of the whole use of this terminology in ICANN seems to be, shall we say, not the most common. Use of the English language as always, but certainly I would see the role of an observer being very much more a one-way track In other words, somebody goes and observes and reports back to their own constituency, whereas I would actually expect a liaison to be a very much more proactive role and be involved in explaining the position of his own community and also then reporting back and seeking to resolve difficulties and differences between those communities. So I don't actually know whether that is what ICANN's use of terminology means, but certainly for me that would be the difference between having somebody who is just an observer, generally a very much more passive role, and the liaison, which I would see as being that much more active and seeking to represent his community in the discussions and explain the position of his community. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. David?
Thank you, Katrina. It's David McCauley for the transcript. I agree with what Martin just said about approaching these terms on a definitional basis. I think there is a distinction between them. However, in practical effect, I don't think there is with respect to these words as used in the bylaws. And I'm looking at section 10.3 right now, and when it talks about liaisons in 10.3b, it says, and these are the liaisons, you know, to the GAC and ROs and things like that. It says, these liaisons shall not be members of or entitled to vote on the CCNSO Council, but otherwise shall be entitled to participate on an equal footing with members of the Council. The next section, Section C, talks about observers and says, such observers shall not be members of or entitled to vote on the CCNSO Council, but otherwise shall be entitled to participate on an equal footing with members of the CCNSO Council. So observers and liaisons, as used in the bylaws, are described as having the same status. At least that's the way I read it. And so in practical effect, I just don't think there's any difference. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, David. Bart?
Say, just going back in history and so in my own memory, because I was involved at the time when this got drafted. This is from the time when the CCNSO was created. It was just to express the difference between, because nobody knew, between, say, you have supporting organizations on one side, so that's the GNSO and the ASO, and then you have others on the other side, others to distinguish from them. And observers was used just to express the link or a relationship with the other supporting organization. And to date, effectively, it's only with the GNSO where we have an exchange of observers. The rest was called liaisons, and as both Martin and David noted, there is, say, functionally, so in powers or however you want, or from another perspective, there is no difference. It's just to express the difference in to whom these people are appointed. And that's the confusing bit about it. So it goes back in time, and you could call them all either observers or liaisons, whatever you want to call them. But that's
okay.
The background.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Then I propose that we call them all liaisons, because, as I already mentioned, according to the bylaws, GNSO may appoint a liaison to the CCNSO Council, but we are supposed to appoint an observer to the GNSO Council. So I just propose that we use liaisons.
And then maybe just as clarifying note,
yeah,
that's referring to 10.3c.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way it's interpreted.
Yeah, okay. And here I have to apologize to Kim. I think Kim is in charge of the files. I was so obsessed with this liaison observers guideline. I just read Martin's comment on it that I started talking about that guideline, even though according to agenda we were supposed to talk about travel funding. So may I ask to change the documents? So sorry about that. We'll get to travel funding a little bit later. Yes, thank you very much. So here we had a discussion, David and Martin. What I wanted to say here is that in this part, it has been agreed between the GAC and CISNES until further notice that the CISNES or GAC liaison group will act as a liaison. But the thing is that apparently, I think here we're talking about the working group that hasn't been active for several years, and that's what I meant by does not work. This particular group does not work, and we have discussed this, the possible ways to revive this group, but by now it hasn't happened. So my proposal is just to remove this particular reference from this from this paragraph here. So that was my I think I liked some proposals that I think it was David who mentioned something. Okay, anyway, I wanted to stress this particular point. Then, yes, I like the wording proposed by David for the purpose of the guideline. I think that was good. Then here we need to clarify the part about observers and liaisons, and article number 4. Yeah, I believe it must be fully rewritten because they do. So it's not upon us to tell others how they are going to appoint their liaisons, but we need to say how we react when we receive some information from others, our SOs, ACs. Bart, I see your hand is up. Yes, please.
Yes, just going back to the point you raised about the GAC CISNZO liaison working group. Might it be in it, say, that you in your capacity as chair of this working group go back to the council and make very clear, say, that, say, the GRC will strike this from the guideline and that the council will take it upon it to explore with the GAC if and how such a group could be or should be set up again.
Oh yes, I think that's one of the possible ways forward, and I think we should also raise it with the GAC.
Yeah, I mean, the council can raise it with the GAC, not the GRC.
Yeah, sure.
That's
right. Yes, I agree. Yes. Okay. Then a little bit forward we go. Okay, some more other comments. Then, 5.1, it says that we appoint liaisons to other entities for the duration of 1 year. I think we're so happy to have liaisons that we do not reappoint them every year unless they do not perform. So I think there's no need to specify any time frame here. Bart, maybe you can comment from a historical point of view. Why do we have 1 year here? And maybe we have a long line of volunteers who
want to... Nope.
Okay, that was my impression too. So so I propose not to have any time constraint here. Then others... yes, so we have 5.2 2, in which we have role of the CCNSO observer to the GNSO Council, and for some reason not to any other. So either we make it for each SOAC where we have liaisons, or just make it a little bit more general. That was a proposal, and well, yeah, that's basically it. So, any other comments? Thanks a lot to David and Martin who took the time to comment on my comments. Any other comments? If not, I will work on this one and send a new version to the group. And yeah, Martin, please.
Thanks, Katrina. It certainly for 5.2, while we might not have observers with the other organisations, it would seem to me to be entirely appropriate for us to make generic, so that when we have observers, that we've got a clear statement of that on which to base what is actually going to happen. But I was actually a bit ambivalent there in that, having got a very specific role with the GNSO Council, whether that in its own right was quite a useful thing to make reference to, because so long as the clause numbers are right, we've actually got something there that embodies it in the action. The reason I think that could actually be useful is that when you come to talk about observers, I'm sorry, excuse me. Sorry about that. When you come to talk about observers or new observer roles that you're putting into place, having a model to be able to go back to, I think is or can be quite useful, even if you turn around and say that model doesn't work in this case. At least you've thought about it. So I wonder whether 5.2 could perhaps initially be role of CCNSO observers, and then 5.2.1 perhaps would then be the specific reference to the GNSO Council that then gives something for the Council, the CCNSO Council, to work on. It looks at future plans. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Any other comments? Okay, if not, then, okay, let's just move to the next version of this document. And now we move back to the travel funding guidelines. Sorry, Kim. And Joke, may I ask you to comment on all the observations that you made?
Absolutely. Thank you, Katrina. So first of all, I would like to mention that our aim was to share the version with track changes and with comments with you, but somehow there seems to be a technical hiccup that prevents us from displaying it in the Adobe room. So we'll see how we can share that version with comments and track changes with the group as soon as possible. So what has been done to date is consulting with the Travel Fund committee members. Those are three members. The comments and concerns that were shared with this group earlier were also shared with those three committee members. No feedback has been received yet regarding the new version of the guideline. And then secondly, the guideline was put into the new format, and that is what you will see here now displayed in the Adobe room. There are indeed some issues that need to be addressed in this new version. First of all, there's some language that needs to be revised, obviously, but also questions like, should we include reference to the ICANN fellowship program, because this was extensively mentioned in the current old version of the guideline. Secondly, there is no description of the role of the CCNSO Travel Fund committee members. Thirdly, I added some language regarding the number of slots that are available to the CCNSO. There's also some confusion in the current old version of the guideline regarding these slots. Sometimes we speak about people, but this is not correct to refer to people to be funded. It's slots that are available, 12 slots. And how these slots can be divided, because you have full funding, which covers air, hotel, and per diem, or partial funding, which covers either air or partial funding and per diem. I tried to put some wording into the timeline, how the timeline is being drafted, and what needs to be taken into account when drafting a timeline for the application period to open, to close, for the travel funding committee members to make the evaluation, and for the deadline of the information to be sent to ICANN Constituency Travel. Regarding the selection process, the current content of the guideline has been copied into this new version that you see there, and some language has been added. And currently in the old or current version of the guideline, there's no reference to publication of the data related to the travel funding. So on the website, a list of funded travelers is being published. Should we also include the distribution of the slots, whether they receive full funding or partial funding? Should we also include the rationale of the decision by the travel funding committee members? So these are all open questions. So that was it from my side. Are there any questions regarding this?
Thank you, Jorke. David, please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Katrina. Just a couple of comments. First, thank you to Jorke for all that work. And for with respect to a couple of questions at the end of what Jorke said, as far as I'm concerned, I think the more that you disclose about travel funding, the better. The more transparency, the better. So not so much with the rationale, but with respect to whether it's partial or whatever it was. I would like to say I apologize. I may have missed the mailing on the travel funding guideline, and I haven't read it. I'm not prepared, so I apologize for that. But it brings up another comment I want to make, and that is with respect to the observer liaison guideline. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually enjoyed working in Microsoft Word with track changes now that I have been working in other groups in Google Docs. So my suggestion would be is if there is time is to put this out in a Word doc and let us take another look at it. But again, I'm sorry if I missed that mail. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Jorke, yes?
Yes, I would just like to reassure David that there hasn't been a mailing yet. It's quite recent work, and the plan is to aim the document with the track changes and the comments in the best possible way with this group. So thank you for the suggestion, David.
Thank you, Jorke. Just wanted to say I'm not sure that all of you receive emails going to the CCNSO members list. So for those who are not on that mailing list or maybe just do not haven't received that particular mail, I sent a mail to the CCNSO members asking them for their initial comments on these two guidelines. So it's travel funding and liaisons. It's again according to our exchange and our proposal for the way forward, how we're going to work on our guidelines from now on. So since we're starting these two guidelines, the question went to the community, so we asked them for initial input. Haven't received much unless they sent it to the secretariat, but I think they did not. We have one question about the travel funding, and yes, about the transparency of these decisions. So all the names of all the funded travelers since the Cairo meeting in 2008, all the names are published. And yes, the question might be about about how the travel funding committee arrived to any decisions about the rationale behind the decision. I'm not sure we can come up with precise instructions or algorithm how they should, what criteria they should evaluate, because in many cases it's, I've been on that travel funding committee and I know how difficult it is sometimes to decide whether to fund a particular applicant or not. So I do not know if it's possible to formalize this decision-taking process, but at the same time, I think that sometimes some decisions are not obvious, to say the least. So the question is, can we do anything to make the process, not only the final result, but also the process more transparent? Jokke, maybe you now have a pretty fresh look on the work of the Travel Funding Committee. I think you did it twice, or three times, four times, three times. So maybe you have a view, some proposals. Maybe you see how we can, if there's any possible way to make the decision making process more transparent and predictable, let's say. Yes, please, Jørgen.
I'm not sure if this helps in making the decision-making process more predictable, but what I've been doing the past two occasions is collecting a list of preference of the people to be funded and how the slot should be distributed from the different committee members, and then making a compromise based on the proposals received, and send this compromise again out for approval. So the compromise is drafted based on the input of the names and the slots as they have been suggested by the committee members.
Yes, well, that's, yes. Okay, maybe I should be more clear and explain the process to others as well. So there's a call for applications for travel funding. Then there's a list of certain questions that applicants need to answer. For example, they have to describe their contribution to the work of the CCNSO, because the CCNSO funding slots, they go to those, well, at least the idea is that they go to those who contribute to the work or are not able to participate in the work of the CCNSO without this funding. Well, at least initially they could come and get acquainted with the CCNSO and its work. So all the applications received go to the three councillors who are on this travel funding committee. They read the applications and actually pick the names that they believe need to be funded. And those applicants who receive the most number of votes, so it's two or three, then they are funded. So that's basically the list, but the process. But I think the process of selecting the applicants is it's up to the councillors. So they evaluate the applications, the contribution, to the seasons. Well, I have to say that sometimes counselors, they well, I've seen cases when counselors voted for funding an applicant who really contributed a lot, but not to the CCNSO. So sometimes it's not clear. Probably we do not have clear guidance to the counselors who serve on the Strela funding committee and how to select the right. The right, again, it's not probably the right word here, but I think you get the idea. So sometimes those who contribute, they maybe they do not write enough, they're too shy, or they do not describe their contribution. Even though they contribute a lot, they do not put that into writing, and the counselors, if they evaluate only the application, which is perhaps the right way, this person does not get funding, and somebody who describes a lot of their contribution to other IGF, for example, they get funding. But I see that I talk a lot here, and I see Bart already wants to say something. Yes, Bart, please.
Yeah, and I talk a lot as well. I don't know whether this would help to take away some of the pressure on and some of the, say, untransparency of how the Travel Funding Committee would work. Even if the Travel Funding Committee would explain to the other members on the committee their rationale for making a selection. It doesn't need to be broader than just a travel funding, because this way at least the Travel Funding Committee is accountable to itself, and then secondly, maybe just do an annual report and with a high level overview of the reasons why people were selected. So it's more a reporting of the Travel Funding Committee on an annual basis and not on individual cases. And then do it on individual cases with your co-members. Because there is no reason, no rationale at all why some people pick who they pick.
Well, yes, I think some reporting, I think it's a good idea. Another thing could be maybe we should rewrite the application form, information that we ask from people who apply. This is something.
Yes, but at the end of the day, I agree, but at the end of the day, it's the selection committee or the travel funding committee who make the selection.
Yeah, sure.
And it's their choice or their decision where you want some transparency, and especially in a case like the CCNSO, and that's something else, where you have a limited number of slots.
Yes. Yeah. I agree. And Joke, can you please take the first stop and maybe come up with a list of some possible reasons for funding, as Alejandra called them, and maybe also a new version of application form and all these maybe more questions, yes and no. Answers something that is easier to answer. We have to take into account that many of those who apply, they are not very fluent in English, so the questions must be really easy to answer, and maybe instead of asking them to provide a description, ask specific questions. Have you participated in working groups? Yes, no. Have you given a presentation, CCNSO meeting? Yes, no, and so on. Something that is much easier to answer. That's one thing. And another thing I wanted to raise is also related to travel funding. And I forgot it. Well, I have to write important things I want to highlight. I have to write them down. Fortunately, I didn't do it with this brilliant idea of mine. So at this point, it will I will leave it out of the discussion. So that's also the next steps for the travel funding thing. So Jokke, they are on you.
Absolutely, Katrina. Thank you.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And agenda item number 4. So may I ask Stephen to give an update on EC thing?
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Had a small slide deck, which I'll run through pretty fast, because basically the short story is it's just reading, trying to figure out what materials need to be considered for this thing. If you can move to the next slide. As you can see, there have been no formal teleconference. Ben and I have been exchanging a modest amount of correspondence back and forth, just trying to get a grip on this and come up with a way to even proceed. I'm working on a document which I'm calling at the moment the roadmap, throwing everything that comes to mind into it in terms of what documents we need to look at, what sections of the bylaw specifically. Next slide as well. And we're looking at a lot of documents. Yes, this is our mandate actually from the bylaws. We've got to adopt rather comprehensive procedures, and I think a lot of what we're going to end up adopting is going to also have to be adopted by the GNSO and ALAC and GAC, although I suspect GAC will have their own flavor. But I thought we're going to probably end up with a lot of similar stuff as the GNSO, so I was going to open a channel with James Bladell of GNSO, who's my counterpart from the GNSO on the ECA, and talk to him about what they're doing, and perhaps we can get some synergy going there. Next slide, and you can go through these pretty quickly. We got a lot of documents to look at, and this is the list to date. Next slide. And more documents. Next slide. Yep, more documents. And next slide, still more documents, exactly. And last but not least, our guidelines as well. I presume these will be circulated. If I can put this out as a PDF to the group just so you have a record, and if anybody thinks of anything I'm not seeing or we're not seeing, let me know. Last slide, then, on the way forward. The roadmap document, which I mentioned previously, looks like the way to get a handle on this is to just get a big whiteboard and start filling it up with various things. There is consistency. There's a lot of stuff that takes 21 days to happen on the bylaw side of things. There is stuff that happens and stuff that doesn't happen regardless of whether we... There's things that happen if we as the EC do not act on something. So there are things that the CCNSO is going to have to pay attention to. Even if they don't want it to happen, they can sit on their hands and prevent it from happening, but there are things we have to do to sit on our hands to prevent things from happening. So there's a lot of nuance in this thing. I think the only way to really capture what's going on in all these documents with all these enumerated powers is to really map this thing out on a big whiteboard that we can then transfer into a spreadsheet of some sort so that we don't drop anything, identify all the consistencies so we don't end up with a 100-page document. And that's kind of where we are. A lot of bylaw reading, and I hope to engage Ben on checking my work as well, so that we don't leave anything behind. That's my biggest fear, is we overlook something we should look. But if the bylaws are basically where it's all happening, and I'm glad to see there appears to be a great deal of consistency with regards to timelines within the bylaws for the various empowered community actions that can be taken. And that's about it. Questions?
Yeah, thank you very much, Stephen. Thanks a lot for all the work and all the reading.
A lot of reading.
Yeah, a lot of reading. I believe that, I just saw it. So any questions? So if not, let's just, first David.
Thanks, Katrina. It's David. I just wanted to ask if Stephen would confirm or not confirm. My recollection from Workstream 1 is that the time constraints that are in there are they're pretty clear, but they're also very tight, if I'm not mistaken. Is that true, Stephen?
There's 21 days, seems to be like and 21 days including weekends. It's like 21 consecutive days seems to be a fairly popular timeline. Yes, and that's been one of my concerns from the get-go on this, is that we may have institutional blockages on the CCNSO side that will prevent us, the way things are currently structured, from acting within the mandated time periods in the bylaws, which would effectively prevent us from doing things that we're allegedly empowered to do. And that's one of the top things I want to identify, are timeline conflicts, because I would need to bring that to the attention of both this group and council as soon as they're identified, because that could be a major problem going forward. Haven't gotten to a stage where I can identify those yet, but it's in the back of my mind to track that. Does that
okay, thank
your,
you.
Yeah.
Martin, does it answer your question?
Katrina, David, it does.
It reminds
me when we do the guideline, as Stephen said, I agree with Stephen, we need to keep the tight timelines in mind to make sure that we create a process that can adapt to that. Because my recollection, and I was involved in a lot of this in Workstream 1, these are very, very tight timelines for groups like CCNSO and GNSO to be able to respond within. So we need to keep that in mind. So thank you very much.
You're absolutely right on that, David.
Okay, thank you, David. Is that, yeah, okay, you changed your mind. Bart, I saw there was
I have it in the chat as well. I'm say Stephen and Ben, I'm checking with Mary Wong from the GNSO site. She is the lead in supporting the GNSO in implementation. What she has is documentation, so I can share it with you.
Great. And I'll be happy to reciprocate.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much for the update, Stephen.
You're most welcome.
Still a lot of work to do. Okay, and number five, introduction of CCNSO roles and responsibilities and processes and procedures related to CSC and PTI. So Bart has news here. News to report.
Not really. And maybe, Stephen, this is a way for you as well, and I don't mind doing this. What I've done is I'm partially supporting the CSC staff support, and one of the things I'm working on with Alan, who's not on the call, is defining the roles of the CSC and what they do and where they need procedures, etc., and processes. And at the same time, what you encounter is the counter site, where the CCNSO, RISG, so the registry stakeholder group, and the GNSO meet processes and procedures in place. So that's what I've mapped out in a mind map, and you can go very detailed, which I've done in some cases. You can link them to, say, bylaw language. So a link to this mind map is a Word document with which includes the bylaw languages and the more detailed action points. So just to go, what I want to focus in on is just with respect to the CSC, say there is an interaction with the CCNSO and where they, what the CCNSO effectively needs to do or be prepared to do. So first of all is receive info, and this is more the members, and as you may recall, say last week, I've sent out on behalf of the CSC a first report. Is secondly, and this is the CCNSO should be prepared and have something in place to receive escalation in case of a deficiency on the PTI performance. And this can go two ways, either through a direct, say, at the end of a direct complaint procedure, or from the CSC itself at the end of its escalation procedure. As you all know, the CCNSO has a role with respect to membership of the CSC. That's 2 points there. One is appoint 2 members, and secondly is approval of the full slate. And this is effectively an existing, say, the guideline that was already developed. Then there is, if you would look at it, say, there is a lot of stuff that needs to go around the charter review, say, initial charter review, second and following charter review, and approval of change of charter. And what is included there, or this is not captured properly, is that the CCNSO and the GNSO need together define the methodology how the charter will be reviewed. So for the first charter review and for the second and following charter review. And I don't have the dates in mind, but you can easily include them. And I have included them. And thirdly, there is this effectiveness review, which should be done, say, within 2 years or 1 year. I can't recall properly. And then finally, which is not included yet, is the CCNSO will have, and the GNSO, but CCNSO from this perspective, will have a explicit role in the IANA Namings Functions Review, the IFR, and in a special IFRS, so a special IANA Functions Review processes, and in the teams. And then finally, in case of the, as member of a cross-community working group on the separation of PTI and ICANN in case it becomes necessary. So this is, you can see from this there, that, say, the GRC needs to address a couple of issues around the CSC. So, and probably the most important ones are getting in touch with the GNSO, how they want to do the, or how jointly to organize the charter review, effectiveness review, and that, say, the and how to deal with, say, potential issues or deficiency in performance of PTI. So that's just to show you a way forward, what's been done in the background, and how to map and manage these kind of process procedures. And maybe, I don't know, Stephen and Ben, whether this is a useful way for you as well. So just let me know. Okay, that's all I had, Katrina, at this stage.
Thank you very much. So I see that people are already impressed. And Martin.
Thanks, Katrina. Yeah, I think that's actually really useful that Bart has put together, in even if quite a scary chart, all these various relationships I think just a couple of things, because the document is actually quite complex, and suddenly sort of confronting this without the ability to flick through the document and find out all the various points that he's referred to. I think one of the concerns I have is that with a document as with a mind map as complicated as this, my first reaction was that we do not recognize or do not appear to be recognizing the fundamental role of the CSC as being exactly what the title says, the Customer Standing Committee. And it's from there that when in design teams C that looked at the role of the Customer Standing Committee, we tried to sort of draw out the charter. We recognized that we were certain to get things wrong. And the role there was to suggest CSC itself should look at its own charter. So this isn't a massive review with the wider community. It's actually a practical, how are we going to work as representatives on the CSC to keep the PTI's customers well informed about what is happening within the CSC. I just wanted to say that because it felt to me like we really do need to keep that particular role very, very clearly in mind. Certainly when we get to the charter review, as being a tool to help the CSC do its job effectively, and recognizing that writing a set of rules in advance, as it turns out, probably a year and a half in advance, was perhaps not the best way of making sure that we had an effective committee. Thanks.
Thank you, Martin. Bart?
Just a few comments. Say, Martin, I fully agree, and that's what I should have added, almost like a mission statement of oversight, operational oversight. That's the reason, and that's the first and fundamental role of the CSC. And if you look at it, they have effectively, the most important one is to just to monitor the performance against the SLAs. That's first, and that's where they have been focusing on. And if necessary, remedy any concerns which are more structural. So these are effectively the fundamentals. I think to nuance your comments, it's not just the CSC charter which is relevant. It's also the ICANN bylaws. It's Article 17, and I think it was either 18 or and 18, which are relevant, which with respect to the special reviews. This is where you can see the CSC is and the CCNSO and GNSO do have a particular role with respect to PTI, etc. So this is building, what's in the bylaws, the CSC charter, and as a third document is the IANA naming functions agreement. Again, there is a particular role defined for the CSC and for the CCNSO with respect to changing that document, and in that document itself, a specific role for the CSC itself. So it's not just the charter itself which makes it complex. I fully agree that's probably the easiest one, but it is, the charter in the context of the other documents, and where they're not really aligned, but there are some small changes in each of these documents, so that makes it complex. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? If not, we're past the hour. Let's move forward to the next agenda item. Any other business? Any other business? Okay, none, apparently. About our next meeting, it's in 2 weeks. And then perhaps we'll have a little bit longer break for season's holidays and other stuff. But in 2 weeks, I propose that we have another meeting. If no other business, let's just, it's 19 December at 1 UTC. Thank you very much for being on the call and for the in-between. So thank you very much and bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.